Chapter 33, of the finding of the little treasure and the return by a different route. At a time when other races were still shooting with bows and arrows, the Chinese had discovered gunpowder, but they only used it to make fireworks and set off firecrackers with a big bang during the New Year festival, so that the evil spirits, which are everywhere, would take fright and remove themselves to some other place. But there were also other means of keeping them away. For instance, it had been found out that the wicked spirits, though they are full of cunning and malice, can only walk straight ahead. Nobody had ever yet seen one of them slipping round a corner. That is why a wall used to be erected behind each gateway, at a little distance away from it, and somewhat wider than the gateway. Thus people, or carts, could walk or drive to the right or the left past the wall, but the evil spirits couldn't. When they wanted to enter a town, they banged their noses against the wall and had to withdraw without entering. These walls were called spirit walls, and they proved quite effective, and everyone who built a house with a wall around it also made sure to build a spirit wall behind the entrance. In Karakoto, too, the people had built spirit walls. Nobody going through the hole in the city wall where the gate once had been could see right in, for the spirit wall had remained standing. Only when one went round it did one see the great expanse of ruins. This, good fortune had said, was a sight to inspire terror, and Christian and Big Tiger, who had never seen a ruined town before, shivered with horror, although the sun was shining. There was really nothing much to see, but it was just that which was terrifying. There was scarcely a trace of any house left. Only where the yamen had stood, a few fragments of stone rose above the square of rubble around which the high walls stood, desolate and solemn. Naidong dismounted. He looked at Christian and Big Tiger, but did not speak of what they were about to do. He simply said, "Let's tie the horses." Taking a heavy stone, he tied a rope crossways about it, and to this he fastened the horses' reins. The poodle lay down exhausted in the shade near the horses. "Here are the spades," said Good Fortune. He too seemed afraid to speak. All had the feeling that they were about to do something wrong. Affliction hung back with drooping head, leaning against the spirit wall. "Is that someone coming?" he asked suddenly. "Oh, it's only you," he said, as Naidong slouched along in his heavy boots. "Wouldn't it be better for us to go back home?" asked Seven Stars timidly. "Especially since I'm with you," said Affliction. "Silence," said Naidong. "I won't hear of such a thing. You," he went on to Affliction, "go to the east wall, Seven Stars to the west wall. I'll remain here, and Good Fortune will go to the south wall. Get behind the parapet and watch through the loopholes. You two," he said to Christian and Big Tiger, "start work when all the guards are posted on the walls, but then be as quick as you can." Christian took the bundle of spades under his arm. "Come," he said to Big Tiger. "Right," said Naidong approvingly. "Now good luck to you and unexpected wealth." He turned to the slope which led up to the city wall, and Seven Stars and Affliction followed him. The poodle lifted his head, but at Seven Stars' order remained with the horses. Good Fortune turned toward the south gate. "Let me go with you," he shouted after Christian and Big Tiger, who had gone on ahead. 55, 65, counted Big Tiger out loud, pacing with even steps. Christian counted softly with him, and Good Fortune's lips moved to 80, Big Tiger announced, stopping and looking around him. "That's it," cried Good Fortune. He went down on his knees in a kowtow, touching the ground with his forehead 3 times. "Where?" asked Christian. "Where you're standing," answered Good Fortune. Christian and Big Tiger bowed too, for they were standing on the remnants of a brick wall, which rose 2 fingers high above the rubble. "Here's where Araptan's palace stood," whispered Christian. He looked around, but the desolation was the same everywhere. At every step they came on pieces of earthenware or china. The citizens of Etzina must have had an immense lot of crockery. It looked almost as if they had had nothing but earthenware pots and china bowls. There were brown, green, and painted fragments, some only baked and others beautifully glazed, but not a single pot or bowl had remained whole. "I see the round stone," cried Big Tiger suddenly. He pointed before him, but did not wait to know if Christian and Good Fortune saw it too. He went straight up to a circle which looked as if it had been drawn with a compass in the rubble, and when he reached it, he pushed aside the covering stones with his foot Underneath was a yellow sandstone with something engraved on it. One could see the sun horses and the tree of the universe with a stone blossom on every twig. Where the branches bent down, they touched the wheel of the seasons and the raised hammers of the smiths. One saw that much and no more. But when Big Tiger bent down and brushed away the brick dust and the broken pottery, the wagoners also came into view. They carried spokes in their hands and the frame of a wheel, which they were assembling. "Leave that alone," said Good Fortune to Big Tiger. "This isn't the right time for looking at old stones." He glanced back. Nidong was standing high on the wall near the north gate. Seven Stars was just rounding the corner to the west wall, and Affliction was already halfway to the east wall. He seemed in a hurry. Good Fortune decided to move off as well. "We must step toward the east," said Christian. 20 paces," said Big Tiger. "Go on, you," said Christian. "You're better in pacing off." Big Tiger stepped forward with even paces, and while doing so, he kept looking up at the ramp of the east gate and counting aloud. 20, he cried. "This is where the little treasure is hidden." "I can't see anything," said Christian. "Let's start," said Big Tiger. "Wait," objected Christian. "First Good Fortune must be at his post." So they waited a while longer. The sky was blue and cloudless. The broken pottery of the Black City glistened in the sun, and Good Fortune's quick footstep faded away. When he got to the south wall, he waved to them, and Affliction and Seven Stars waved, too. Nidong only nodded, for he was staring attentively over the dead forest as if there was something to see. Because of this, Christian was not quite sure if his nod was the signal to proceed. "Are you afraid?" asked Big Tiger. "I'm not afraid," said Christian, "but Nidong didn't wave like the rest." "That doesn't matter," said Big Tiger reassuringly, beginning to push the earth and the rubble aside. Then each took a spade and began prodding and digging to see if he could hit on something solid, which might be a stone. "Nothing here," said Christian. "There must be," said Big Tiger. "Perhaps someone has been here before us," Christian replied, throwing a swift glance toward the east gate, where Affliction stood near the loophole on the wall. But his back was turned, and he didn't stir. "Hello," cried Big Tiger suddenly. "Hello," said Christian. "Have you struck something hard?" "Yes, here it is," replied Big Tiger, and put his finger to his nose knowingly. Then both dug busily. They took off their coats, and that made things easier. At every stroke of their spades, they could see a bit more of the stone slab, which was as yellow as the base on which the silver fountain had once stood. "I'd like to have seen the silver fountain," said Christian. Big Tiger stuck his spade in the ground beside him, and Christian did the same, for now the stone slab was free. It was somewhat bigger than a large chessboard and divided into a number of squares. 8 8s, counted Christian. But before he had time to say that apparently the people of Etsina had played chess, a whistle was heard from the north wall. "What's that?" cried Big Tiger, alarmed. "Nidong's noticed something," said Christian. They looked over to the north gate, where the horses stood near the spirit wall, and where Nidong stood up above, leaning against the rampart. He was looking intently toward the dead forest, and at the same time with his hand making signs to them that they should hurry. "Perhaps someone's coming," guessed Big Tiger. "I know who's coming," replied Christian, "and you know, too." "Well, it can't be helped," said Big Tiger, bending down. "The fellow wants his snake coin back." "If that's what it is, we'd better hurry," said Christian. They raised the slab together and then took to their spades again. On the other side of the slab there were letters engraved, but Big Tiger scarcely glanced at them, and Christian not at all. They dug as fast as they could. At first they had been careful not to scatter the earth about, but now they no longer minded. "Quick, before it's too late," thought Christian. The earth flew up. It was a little damp, and here and there a bit of charcoal sparkled. Suddenly Christian's spade grated against something and glanced off a piece of gray metal. The scratched spot shone brightly. "Number one," cried Christian, lifting a silver shoe out of the hole. 100 ounces, said Big Tiger with an expert air, weighing the lump of silver in his hand. It was shaped like a little boat, and a square sign was stamped on its center. "Come on," urged Christian. One silver shoe after another came to light. When all 10 were lying in a row on the edge, the hole was empty. There was another whistle, and this time Naidong made urgent signs that they should hurry up. Christian and Big Tiger threw the earth back into the hole, covered it with the slab inscribed, "The Great Treasure is Near," upside down, and then, as quickly as possible, shoveled sand and rubble over it. "Would you notice anything?" asked Christian. Big Tiger knit his brows critically. "You'd notice that someone had been digging here," he said, "because of the fresh earth. But tomorrow it will hardly be visible, and the day after it will look like everything else." "The day after tomorrow is far off," said Christian. He knelt down and packed the silver bars into the blue canvas in which the spades had been wrapped before, and Big Tiger knelt beside him and tied the cord. "We can't undo what's done," he said. "Now we've got to get away as fast as we can." Christian then secured the knots as an American Marine in Peking had taught him. They hung the bundle on their spades and carried it between them. "Hello," shouted Christian. "We've made it," cried Big Tiger. Good Fortune forthwith left his post at the south gate. He came down the ramp in big leaps, and Affliction came from the east gate. All met near the horses. The poodle leaped up, barking joyfully. Only Naidong remained at his post on the north wall. Hidden behind a parapet, he was watching carefully, and when he saw that all were assembled, he called down, "Come up to me, but don't be seen from outside." "Is someone there?" asked Good Fortune. Naidong frowned in perplexity. "I don't see anyone, but I notice there's someone there." "I understand," said Good Fortune, but he had no idea what Naidong meant. While he led the way up the ramp, which formerly had steps but was now only a sandy sloping channel, he gave directions. "Up there, creep on all fours until each of you is behind a breastwork. Then stand up. Do exactly as I do." "Balna!" cried Christian. "Stay down there, dog," Seven Stars told the poodle. When they got up on the wall, they crept along, one after the other, behind the rampart, like a family of bears, until each was screened by a high parapet and could stand up. Christian and Big Tiger looked out cautiously. "Do you see anything?" asked Naidong. "I see the hard clay ground with cracks in it, but there's nobody there. Behind it I see the dead forest, with the trees lying about, but there's no one there either." "And you?" asked Naidong. "I see what Compass Mountain sees, and nothing more." "Look closely," said Naidong. "Behind the dead forest there's a hill to the east, which reaches down to the poplars, where the Etzen Gall used to flow. Can you see that?" "I see the hill," said Big Tiger, "but it's very far away." "There's an oboe on the hill," said Christian. "It's not an oboe," Naidong pointed out. "It's an old wall, which, like everything belonging to the Black City, is a ruin. There's only a little bit of it left. It's the height of a man and 20 feet long. Keep your eyes on that wall." "Aha," said Good Fortune. "I'd rather not," said Affliction. "Is there something there?" asked Christian. "There is sometimes," answered Naidong, "but you have to watch very closely." "There it is again," he cried. "Did you see it?" "It's a branch waving in the wind," said Good Fortune. "That's quite plain. Behind the wall there's a little tree or bush, and when a gust of wind comes..." "But there isn't any wind," said Seven Stars. "I've got it," cried Christian. "It's not a matter of what you've got," said Good Fortune irritably. "It's a matter of the tree that's behind that wall." "There's a horse behind the wall," said Christian, "and because he's impatient, he's swishing his tail, and that's the thing that looks like a branch blowing in the wind." "Compass Mountain is right," said Naidong. "There's a horse behind the wall, and where there's a horse, there must be a rider. He can't be seen, but he's there, and so we must make plans that we don't fall into the tiger's jaws." "The horse has a light-colored tail," cried Seven Stars. "The man who hit my dog on the nose had a horse like that." "I thought so," said Naidong gloomily. Good Fortune tapped his holster significantly. "The human body," he said, "has 7 openings. I'll make an 8th one in that scoundrel's body." "No," cried Affliction in alarm. "That won't do. We have to think of something better." "What does Big Tiger think?" asked Naidong. "A voluntary retreat is the saving of the noble and the confusion of the wicked." "This time," said Good Fortune, "your grandfather's counsel isn't good enough. How can we withdraw when that bird out there has his neck stretched out towards us?" Big Tiger pointed to the heaps of big round stones which lay at intervals behind the parapet. "These were intended for the defenders of Etzina to throw down on the heads of their enemies." "Here's a stone as big as a man's head," said Big Tiger. "We'll push it into the loophole. Then it will look as if someone was watching here, and it will be a long time before the rider to whom the horse belongs notices that he's been fooled. When at last he ventures into the town, we'll be gone long ago, for we'll ride out by the south gate. No one can see behind the spirit wall, and we'll withdraw peacefully and unnoticed." "Big Tiger knows more than how to draw his breath," cried Nidong enthusiastically. "Some day his voice will be heard in the assembly of sages, and his word will carry." "I'm only a poor ignorant boy," protested Big Tiger modestly. "It is my grandfather's knowledge which I pass on." "You're a fine rascal," said Good Fortune benevolently, "and your grandfather's another." "Come and mount your horses, men," cried Nidong. Good Fortune pushed a great stone into one of the loopholes, and one after the other, they crawled along on all fours until they got to the ramp. When they got to their horses, suddenly all felt in splendid spirits. Even Affliction managed to smile. Nidong alone stood with knit brows, glancing from the blue cloth bundle to the spades and back again. "This won't do," he said. "We must pack up the spades and take out the silver." "Bolna," said Christian, and began to undo the knots. "The silver is a little gray, but that doesn't matter." And he opened up the cloth. There lay the 10 silver shoes. Good Fortune took one of them and scratched it with his nail until the bright metal showed. He gave a nod of satisfaction. "Let each of us 5 men hide away 2 silver shoes," said Nidong.
"I, 2?" asked Affliction.
"You're one of us," replied Nidong amiably. "Stick them into your pocket. Hurry up, hurry up." Thereupon, each took 2 silver shoes, and Nidong packed the spades in the blue canvas. They then set out, Nidong leading. The horse's hoofs beat sharply on the rubble, which crackled and crumbled, and the round base of the fountain, upon which smiths had wrought the wheel of the seasons, lay in its place in the sun. "It's a pity," said Big Tiger to Christian. "I'd have liked to see the other pictures." "So would I," said Christian, putting a hand in his pocket. "Look what I found on the city wall when we were creeping on all fours." It was a black bronze arrowhead, completely corroded, like the instruments of the observatory in Peking. "Take it as a keepsake," he said.
"You give me a valuable present, and I've nothing to give in return," said Big Tiger.
"But wait a moment," he added, remembering the silver coin with the snake on it. "I have this, but it's not a real present, as it doesn't belong to me." "Never mind," Christian comforted him. "Now each of us has a snake which doesn't belong to him, and I'm curious to know what will come of it." During this conversation, they had got to the former center of the city, where there was a high hill of rubble and some remains of walls. The yamen had stood here, Nidong said, but even that wasn't certain. They were nearing the south gate, and as they rounded the spirit wall, Christian cast a last glance back at the tragic black city, which was no longer a city. The horses trotted out the gateway, and for a time not a hoofbeat could be heard, for the sand stood high in drifts, and the horses had difficulty wading through it. Scarcely 20 paces from the city gate, a camel path led from east to west, or west to east, depending on which way one wished to go. Nidong took the path going west, which ran alongside the city walls. Here the storms of centuries had piled up vast masses of sand against the walls. The projecting bastions were buried in sand up to their pinnacles, and only the battlement showed. At the southwest corner, perched high on the round tower, stood a Mongol chorten, and a note says a chorten is a Mongolian or Tibetan shrine, usually built over the bones of a holy man. This was the last distinguishable feature of the dead city. The hard, yellow, cracked clay soil spread before them, and it was impossible to imagine that luxurious gardens surrounded by bamboo hedges and flowering shrubs had once stood here. Instead of blooming apricot trees, there were now tamarisks with gnawed barks, and deep sand covered the fertile soil. The path led through a labyrinth of hills, which to Nidong's satisfaction completely hid the group of riders. Nidong urged his horse to a smart trot. It was evident that he was anxious to get away from the Black City as quickly as possible. The sun was warm, Nidong's wet coat was steaming, and the poodle's tongue was hanging out. After 2 hours, the route led them over a brook. There were trees again, and grass, and wooded hills. One might have imagined that they were real woods if the sea of sand behind them had not been so yellow and so endless. Between the hills, a river glistened. The horses slowed to a walk, their hoofs clattering over round stones or pounding on moist sand. And then the party found themselves before the broad bed of the Ika Gal. The horses immediately pressed forward toward the water, but Naidong called out, "Ride on, they must not drink yet." Holding a tight rein, he urged his own roan into the water, which was rushing northward with a strong current, scarcely a foot deep. From the middle onward it got deeper, but it was not until they neared the other bank that the water reached to the animals' bellies. The riders drew up their knees, the poodle swam, and the river was crossed. Once more, smooth round stones and sand covered the ground, and the camel track, which Naidong had been following previously, ran westward, well trodden out. "That's the way to Xinqiang," said Naidong, lifting his right arm like a signpost. "I know," muttered Good Fortune. "If you'll excuse me, I'd like to examine it a bit." "That's not necessary," cried Naidong. "The old Marin will be able to tell us." He turned his horse and rode northward downriver without waiting for an answer from Good Fortune. Their path led through high derisen grass and scrub. The Ika Gal curved round at this point and disappeared from view, but its farther course could be traced by the fringe of trees. A pleasant stretch of low flat country opened up between two ranges of hills, and in the middle of it stood a new white felt tent. A faint curl of smoke rose from the smoke vent and circled in the warm air. "The old man is at home," murmured Naidong, well pleased. He halted under a stout poplar, took the empty bottle from the saddlebag, and stuck it in his belt. "Give me the silver bars," he said. "We'll put them into the saddlebag now. It is for the sake of the truth," he added, smiling, "which I must make pleasant for the old Marin. But please do not think me a liar for that reason." They all protested they would not, and Good Fortune asked Naidong how he could think such a thing of them. "The truth needs to be helped on its feet. Everyone knows that," he added. "But there are people," warned Affliction, "who notice when you're helping it." "I would have you know," said Good Fortune sternly, "that our respected elder Naidong is an unrivaled master of the 10,000 rules in this respect." Affliction apologized, and Naidong packed the silver shoes into the leather bag. Then, standing up in the stirrups, he pushed the blue bundle of spades into the lower branches of the poplar. Having done these things, he became gay. "Yap bona," he cried, and they rode at a headlong gallop up to the yurt. As they dismounted, a thin, naked arm raised the entrance curtain. Then a dark red Tibetan wool vest appeared. Fine gold lace trimmed the upright collar, from which a long neck emerged. It sat firmly on bony shoulders, supporting a face whose eyes were keen and bright. The old man wore a black Chinese cap and an equally black, shining pigtail. Long white sheepskin trousers and plated straw shoes completed the old Marin's attire. "The pigtail is false," whispered Naidong with a confidential grin. He threw the reins to Seven Stars and went forward with a smile to meet the old Marin. "Is your rest easy and good?" he called out. "Oh, picture sheet," said the Marin, his face alight with joy. "Have you had an easy journey?" "Easy and good," lied Naidong. "We come direct from home." "Indeed," said the Marin skeptically. "It doesn't look much like it," and he pointed to the poodle, which was shaking the water out of its long coat. "That dog is different from others," Naidong explained. "His thick coat holds water half a day." "That is unhealthy," said the Marin, observing the poodle sharply. "That's true," admitted Naidong. "He often coughs, especially at night." They then exchanged snuff bottles, after which Naidong introduced his guests one by one. "You may speak to the Marin in your native language," said Naidong to Christian and Big Tiger. "He comes from the land of the Chachar Mongols. In the old days, when the Empress sat on the dragon's throne, he was responsible for 500 horses of the imperial herds. In those days, he often went to Peking." "We have just come from Peking," said Big Tiger, bowing. "But we're here now," said Christian, also bowing. The Marin seemed pleased. His wrinkled face was like old leather, and he had a roguish twinkle in his eyes. His aquiline nose was in striking contrast to his high Mongolian cheekbones. But for them, he would have looked like an old Red Indian chieftain. "Come in," he cried encouragingly. "It's warm in here." He helped Seven Stars to tie up the horses and was the last to enter the yurt. A bright wood fire was blazing, the tea kettle was singing, and the right number of cushion seats lay ready, as if the Marin had expected the visitors. "Did you see us coming?" Naidong asked uneasily.
I heard the horses, and then I saw you, the Marin admitted, filling the tea bowls. Nidong has told me about you, began Good Fortune, and about the wide and varied experience which adorns your great age. I begged him to make us acquainted. Picture sheet exaggerates, murmured the Baron politely. I am only an ignorant clown. As for me, said Affliction, I was only riding along with the others. Please excuse my presence. I welcome every honorable man, cried the Marin. Speaking of honorable men, began Nidong, I want to ask you something. If you wish to ask me about Greencoat, he was with me the day before yesterday. It is not without reason that all marvel at your wisdom, cried Nidong. That's the very man we're looking for. He was attacked by a murderous gang, reported the Marin darkly. How terrible, said Nidong, grinning. Oh, the scoundrel, roared Good Fortune. He's a ruffian, and his father was one before him. See these two young princes, said Nidong. Do they look like members of a murder gang? We were speaking of honorable people, said the Marin seriously. Let us therefore investigate how the matter really stands. The matter stands this way, cried Good Fortune angrily, namely that Greencoat is a criminal who should be brought before the magistrate. He's on his way to the magistrate, answered the Marin, to lodge a complaint as quickly as possible. Saying this, he gave Good Fortune a searching look, and Good Fortune immediately began fidgeting on his seat. Is your seat not comfortable? Asked the Marin. It's perfect, muttered Good Fortune. Speak, requested Nidong, taking his pipe from his boot. Tell us what you know. Then we will tell you our story. The day before yesterday, toward midday, began the Marin, I heard a thunder without beginning or end. It quickly came nearer, and then I knew it was one of those roaring, horseless cars. The thunder stopped suddenly behind the hill, and soon afterwards Greencoat came running. "I've come to warn you," he said, "that a notorious robber and murderer has arrived at Olantore. His name is Good Fortune." The Marin paused, and everyone looked at Good Fortune. He had pulled himself together, however, and was sitting quietly on his cushion, and the battery of eyes did not upset him. "It is the way of criminals," he said contemptuously, "to accuse other people of their own crimes." "Well said," cried Nidong, "that's just so," and he lit his pipe contentedly. "I asked Greencoat," continued the Marin, "whether something had happened, and he said, yes, something has happened. I bought myself a horseless car with which I intend going on the Silk Road to liven up my trade. I had been traveling many days and came at night to the Goitzen Gaul. There was a tent there, and in the tent were two of General Fang's soldiers and the deserted soldier Good Fortune, who is a notorious Redbeard. Two boys, one of them a foreign devil from beyond the seas, were also there. The whole thing looked very suspicious to me, but Good Fortune told me he had rescued the youngsters from a robber band and was now taking them home to their parents. I accepted his story, said Greencoat, though I didn't believe a word of it. I then asked the soldiers to sell me some gasoline. We can't do that, said one of them, whose name was Springtime Snake. The general has forbidden us. Come now, said the other. Our general won't miss a few cans. He demanded an outrageous price, but I paid it. The rascals knew then that I had money with me and decided to kill me. The honest soldier, Springtime Snake, was horrified, but what could he do? While I was asleep, the children, who are practiced thieves, stole my pistol and all the cartridges I had. Then the criminals wanted to murder me, but as Springtime Snake wouldn't have any traffic with them, they began quarreling among themselves, and I woke up. There was a fearful struggle. I fought my way out like a tiger. The accursed kids bit me, and if Springtime Snake hadn't taken sides with me, I would have come to a frightful end. But I just managed to escape, and now I'm on my way to Suchow to notify the magistrate so that he'll send police and soldiers to liquidate that nest of robbers. Greencoat then bade me goodbye, saying, I'd advise you, old Marin, to leave at once and hide until the rascals are shot. As your friend, I warn you. Thank you for the news, I said. I'll follow your advice. And you've stayed here all the same, asked Nidong. How's that? I wanted to make the acquaintance of the robbers and murderers, replied the Marin, smiling. They're all here, Nidong assured him. You should really be trembling. I am indeed trembling, asserted the Marin. Permit me to strengthen myself. He put a little copper can of arrak to warm on the hot embers, and while the glasses went round, Nidong told what had happened in Olantore. The Marin wagged his head thoughtfully, and his pigtail swung to and fro. "This is a pressing matter," he said. "Let me think. In 7 days," and he ticked them off on his fingers, "the soldiers from the Yamen may be here." "And 2 days have passed already," Naidong reminded him. "So only 5 are left," said the Marin. "Probably the soldiers will need longer, but we can't count on that. Greencoat is a friend of the chief magistrate in Suchow, so it will be easy for him to get his story accepted and have soldiers sent out at once." "Will they really shoot us?" asked Christian.
"Heaven only knows," replied the Marin. "We're living in queer times, and the good old days are gone. I'd advise you to get away quickly."
"I've been thinking that, too," said Naidong. "My friends have no mounts and no provisions, so I searched some old chests and found 10 silver shoes, which I had completely forgotten about."
"It's easy to forget such things," said the Marin seriously. He carefully scrutinized the silver, which Naidong was unpacking, scratching and biting it here and there. "It is good," he said. "I can't read the stamp, but it is pure silver. I'll give you its weight in current silver coinage. Isn't that what you want?"
"That's rather little for it," said Naidong. "Don't you think so yourself?"
"I'm a poor man," sighed the Marin, locking up the silver shoes in his chest. "I confess that if we had more time, a higher price could be obtained. But the matter is urgent. The Chinese money changer on the Morangal won't give me 1 box more than the usual rate of exchange. Haven't you said yourself that you must hurry? So accept it."
"I won't bargain with you," said Naidong magnanimously. "Have you got scales?"
"What on earth are you saying? I've never used scales in all my life. I'm not one of the people who forget the silver bars they've got in their chests and then don't even know their weight."
"There are 1,000 ounces in all," muttered Naidong. "I only wanted you to make sure for yourself."
"Your word is enough for me," said the Marin solemnly. "I'll bring you the boxes tomorrow."
"There's another trifling matter," said Naidong.
"The trifling matter is silence. Don't worry about that."
"Bolna," cried Naidong, relieved.
"Then there's nothing more to discuss. Our business is done, and we're off."
"Why hurry?" cried the Marin. "Let's drink another glass in peace."
He filled the glasses, and when he came to Big Tiger, the Marin lent him his black cap. "For," said he, "wine must be approached with reverence. What have you done with your cap?"
"Big Tiger gave me his cap because my hat fell into the Dondergal and sank," explained Naidong.
"Things," said the Marin, "cannot always remain where they should. I have a hat which never fitted me properly because my plate is so thick. Perhaps it would suit you."
He opened the chest again and took out a magnificent Mongolian fur hat, which he offered to Big Tiger on a haddock.
10,000 thanks," said Big Tiger. "I am unworthy of your generous gift, but the hat does fit me."
"Bravo," cried the Marin. "You are a master of correct behavior." He gleefully filled a glass for himself, then reached down nimbly behind the chest and produced a stringed instrument. It looked like a small wooden drum with a long bridge over which 2 strings were stretched.
"Oh, Marin," begged Naidong, who had quite forgotten that it was time to go, "please sing us the song about Chusera."
The Marin screwed up his eyes. "But that's a sorrowful song, old picture sheet," he said. He took up the bow. He himself was the first whose eyes filled with tears when the melancholy cadences had barely begun. In spite of this, he sang very loudly. Christian and Big Tiger could only understand an occasional word about the beautiful grass and the yurt, but when the song came to an end, they said, "It was as beautiful as the violin playing of the Yellow Emperor, and more so." The Marin nodded, pleased with the flattery, but suddenly he stood up.
"It seems to me there's somebody around the tent who shouldn't be," he said. "Will you excuse me?"
He slipped out of the tent so quickly that even Naidong did not at once grasp what he meant. But then a nasty suspicion occurred to him, and he ran quickly after the Marin. The others followed on his heels.
"No trace of anything," said the Marin, emerging from behind the yurt, "though I could have sworn. But, of course, it's easy to be mistaken."
"What could you have sworn?" asked Good Fortune.
"That someone was creeping about. Just as I picked up the violin, I heard a noise, but I thought it was your dog."
"Our dog would have torn any stranger to shreds," Naidong assured him. "He's a dog of the highest breeding and worth a whole pack."
"Dog," cried Seven Stars, "come here."
"He's gone," said Christian. "There's no sign of him."
"Perhaps he suddenly got thirsty and ran down to the river," said Big Tiger.
"He never does that, Seven Stars objected. It must be something else. Dog, come here.
But she called in vain. Naidong went and untied the horses.
We must go, he said angrily. Whatever becomes of that confounded dog? Didn't I say he was no good?
He's a real unlucky dog, agreed Affliction.
Father, pleaded Seven Stars, let me stay here and wait for the dog.
You may remain 2 hours, said Naidong, but you must set out then to be home before dark.
Please, may we stay too? Asked Christian and Big Tiger.
Very well, said Naidong. Then, while the old Marin was looking around once more behind the yurt, he took them aside.
From here we ride straight down river, he whispered. Otherwise the old man will suspect something, and you must pick up the spades, but don't be seen doing it.
We're accustomed to doing things without being seen, said Christian.
Don't worry, said Big Tiger. We'll think of a good explanation.
Yabona, cried Naidong. Hi, Marin, we're off. I have to go home to the herds.
May your road be easy and good, cried the Marin, slouching quickly along in his straw shoes.
All the same, he said to Naidong under his breath, I think there's been someone here. There's a spot behind the yurt which looks as if someone had been kneeling there.
Watch the silver, warned Naidong as he mounted. There are some queer birds knocking around these times.
Good Fortune and Affliction mounted too, and Good Fortune said, We live in an unworthy age, and there are people who go prowling about.
Oh, don't be uneasy about me, said the Marin. No one has ever harmed me yet.
Say Yabona, cried Big Tiger, Christian, and Seven Stars.
The Marin looked hard after the riders.
Simple old picture sheet, he murmured. Come on, children, he added aloud, sitting down in the sun in front of the yurt. Let's find out where your dog can be. Sit down.
How could we venture to seat ourselves in your presence? Asked Big Tiger.
We would not dare, murmured Christian. Saying these polite words, they bowed and sat down beside the Marin. Seven Stars sat opposite them.
Your good manners warm a man's heart, said the Marin. They remind me of the good old days before the order of the world was disturbed. But I notice something which I don't like.
He pointed to the ring on Big Tiger's thumb, and Big Tiger got red, for he had a foreboding that the wily old Marin knew the snake and its meaning. While he was seeking in vain for an explanation, Christian came to his aid.
That ring, said Christian very slowly, do you mean the ring on Big Tiger's thumb, or is it something else?
His grandfather gave it to him, put in the unsuspecting Seven Stars. Good Fortune said so, and he also said it's a lucky ring.
Oh, indeed, said the Marin, with the suspicion of a wink.
If Good Fortune said so, it must be true. But come, children, let us not forget the dog.
Saying this, he took from his belt pouch 9 old copper coins of the Ming Dynasty.
Seven Stars was highly delighted.
He's going to throw the 9 coins, she whispered. He's consulting the oracle. Then we'll find the dog.
Tinger metne, said the Marin thoughtfully, polishing one of the coins on the stone of the threshold. Then he shook the coins in his cupped hands, breathed on them, and shook again. He seemed to be murmuring an incantation. He shook once more, then spread the coins out on his right palm, one after another, where they lay, black or white, as the Marin said, on the right or wrong side. The polished coin came second.
Seven Stars was greatly excited. She didn't venture a question, however, but looked timidly up at the Marin, as if she could read good or bad news from his face. But that was quite impossible, for the old man, being an experienced reader of omens, was utterly impassive.
Your dog has gone over the mountain, he said casually, for he smelled a wolf, but nothing has happened to him. You'll find him again at the hour of the ape.
That's 3 to 5 p.m., a note says.
Seven Stars bowed profoundly.
That's splendid! Many, many thanks, she cried.
She looked up at the sun and immediately wanted to dash off.
It's the hour of the ape already, she said.
Stay a bit longer, said the Marin. There's no hurry. The dog is waiting for you.
But Seven Stars begged the Marin to permit her to go. She ran straight to the horses and untied them. Big Tiger and Christian wanted to help her, but the Marin held them back.
My child, he said in a low voice to Big Tiger, I've never seen your ring before, but I know the snake and I know what it means. Allow me to ask where you got the ring.
The holy man Yolros Lama gave it to me, saying that it would bring me help in time of need.
The Marin breathed a sigh of relief.
I was in great anxiety, he said, but now I know all is well. Go your way in peace, my child, and you too. Then, to their great surprise, he embraced Big Tiger and Christian. This had never happened to them before. When they had mounted, Christian said casually, "We'll ride around by the hill to look for the dog."
"That's right," replied the Marin amiably, "and don't forget to take down the long thing that friend Picture Sheet stuck up in the poplar."
"We won't forget," said Christian, thoroughly flabbergasted. "Goodbye."
"Se yabona," cried the Marin.
He seemed to want to say something else, but instead turned back to the yurt. It was new and white, showing the comfortable circumstances of its owner. When they were out of hearing, and the horses were trotting along briskly after their long rest, Big Tiger said, shaking his head, "It can't be helped. Secret things are open to that old Marin."
They halted under the poplars, and Christian stood up in his stirrups and pulled the bundle of spades out of the branches. He then tied them to his saddle. The Marin's white yurt disappeared from view, and the horses trotted through the high Derisen grass. Not far from the ford through which they had come, Seven Stars turned to the west. Soon the grass ceased, the scrub receded, and a long succession of dunes with overhanging ridges spread out along the route. Suddenly, right before them, they saw what Seven Stars had been looking for. Along by the verge of grass, just where the last traces of herbage struggled with the sand, and green spikes of reed stood out of the ground as if they had been stuck in there, ran two wheel tracks. They were wide, and in places the tread of the tires could be seen. "This is the shortest way to Olantore," said Seven Stars, pointing. "Greencoat drove this way," said Christian. "Where's the dog?" asked Big Tiger. "There's the hill we could see from the Marin's yurt," cried Seven Stars. "My dog is there."
"Tinger Metne," said Christian doubtfully.
"No," cried Seven Stars indignantly. "The old Marin said the dog is there, so it is there."
"I didn't mean to make you mad," said Christian apologetically. Then they followed the wheel tracks at a smart trot. When, well ahead, the trees fringing the Ica goal reappeared, Christian detected a dark spot between the wheel treads. Big Tiger saw it too, and Seven Stars began calling, "Dog, dog, come here!" But the black dot didn't move. Instead, it began to mark.
"There he is," cried Seven Stars joyfully. "He must have killed the wolf."
"Then it must have been a very young wolf," said Big Tiger.
Seven Stars threw him an angry glance and rode faster. As they got nearer, they saw that the poodle was standing over a gray heap of fur, and they could hear him barking. At last, he grasped the lifeless thing in his teeth and dragged it busily towards the riders.
"He's killed the wolf," cried Seven Stars proudly, "and now he's bringing it along."
"The wolf has a string round its body," said Big Tiger.
"It's a sheepskin he's carrying," said Christian.
Seven Stars didn't answer, for the heap of fur was lying there, and they could see now what it was. The poodle stood beside it, barking joyfully. Then he tugged again at the rolled-up sheepskin, which was tied around with a string. Someone must have lost the fur.
"It's my coat," said Christian, dismounting.
"Greencoat lost it," said Big Tiger.
"The string broke, so the bundle fell from the truck."
"The dog knew by the smell that it was your coat," said Seven Stars to Christian. "That's why he waited here. He's no ordinary dog. He looks for things even before one says, 'Lost, seek.'"
"Nothing escapes him," applauded Christian.
"But what about the wolf?" asked Big Tiger.
Seven Stars thought a little and then said, "Come."
She followed the tracks of the poodle for about 100 paces until a second trail of pad marks, scarcely visible, branched off from it. "The wolf went this way," Seven Stars explained, "and from here the dog saw the coat. So he ran to it, because the traces of the wolf are old. My dog is clever."
"He's an extraordinary dog," admitted Big Tiger, and Seven Stars was pleased.
As the moon rose in the east, pouring a gentle light over the grass and bushes and all the foliage, the tardy travelers reached the Narin goal. Naidong was waiting for them on the river bank.
"There's news," he said.
"Good or bad?" Seven Stars asked him.
"It's not good," said Naidong.
The poodle barked joyfully on seeing him again.